Hello, and this is last year I was told what to say at least for the first. I'm the Pink Athena, and this is Alanka. She's joining us. I think they said she's a game writer or something.
Shall I introduce myself?
That would be great, yeah.
Hi, my name is Ilanka Dunnan. I'm General Manager of Online Community for Simutronics Corporation. We have several multiplayer games out on the web. We also have the longest, among the commercial multiplayer games, we have the longest running game in the world. So we have Gemstone 3, which has been open for over 10 years. We have characters in the game today that go back continually, a persistent world for over 10 years. So we've had a lot of experience with game economy issues and items being transferred between characters and such. So I have a lot of good war stories for you.
And this is Chia Pet. We game together on UO.
My name is Alan Gibson. I go by the handle normally of Chia Pet. I'm active in quite a few of online gaming out there in the online gaming communities. I also am a companion with Origin, which is also called OSI, if anybody's familiar with that, which means that I'm active in helping new players get started in the game and helping them to maximize their initial enjoyment of the game so that they don't become stressed out by the online community and quit the game, you know, after shortly joining before they have a full idea of what the full perspective of the game can be.
We had others who were supposed to be here today, but they didn't make it.
They were missing about three people, I think.
But I know that Chia has gathered the information. Sure. She's going to be great. The reason I'm here is I'm a female and I play games, and I'm known as the Pink Athena. Beta tested UO, Azeron's Call, EQ, and Diablo 2 so far. And I'm too far away. Is that better? So I guess the first thing, since this is last year, it started off, we did the virtual reality thing and kind of explained what was going on. And Shirley was here who did that. This year, Chia Pet, or Alan, has gathered a bunch of information on that. And as we go along, you can ask questions and it'll go wherever.
Mm-hmm. Okay, mostly what this panel seems to be about is we're talking about virtual property, which is an intangible asset that is out on the internet that is related somehow to online gaming. Online gaming recently is turning more and more into a community event, unlike the games that they're playing across the hall from here, where you would go in and play for approximately 20 minutes, whoop somebody else's butt, or get defeated. More and more, a lot of the online games are going into sort of an eternal game. I can hear me now.
The voice of God.
A lot of the games are turning into sort of a perpetual game, such as Azeron's Call, EverQuest, Ultima Online, where the idea is not so much that there is an immediate or goal that you're trying to reach, but you're actually playing a game that could go on for the next 5 years. Your goals would change as you play. You initially would start out maybe just wanting to be a fighter or just to get money. But gradually you would meet other people, make friends in the games, and it becomes a sort of a community in itself. I know hundreds of people in the game that I have no idea what their real names are. They get married in the game. They exchange rings in the games. And one of the things they also do is they exchange property. Now, this property has a value in the game itself, of course, because, it's a status symbol. Having a house or a castle in, for instance, Ultima Online, you can walk around the game and brag about it. But more and more what we're seeing is that these assets in the game, although they are intangible and they do not exist anywhere in real life, are actually being traded on the internet for pretty much large sums of money. I went on last night onto eBay and did some searching just to get some current prices, for example. Ultima Online just recently went through a big land rush where they doubled the amount of area that was available for placing these intangible houses that people live in, decorate, and trade back and forth. Last night I found that in Great Lakes Shard, a castle right now is being sold on eBay for approximately $700. Now, this person basically placed this thing last Friday, It's on eBay now for $700, and this guy is going to make a bundle off of this. And the people are selling homes, like I said, in the games, but they're also selling smaller items that they find in the games. A player may get out and kill a monster in the game and get a dagger that has special properties or something. He'll get on there and sell it on the internet for $50. Somebody else agrees to meet him. They meet in the game, they trade the property, and the other person sends the person a check or a money order. So it's kind of exciting. Also, we're seeing also a lot more and more people are playing the games. This is exciting to me. I initially got into Ultima Online. I only paid about maybe $45 for the game. I started with the beta test on the second day of the beta test. So you would say my initial outlay was $45. Now, Ultima Online only costs about $10 a month to play. So I've been playing for about 2 years. So you would say I have put out about $240 playing the game. I personally think that's one of the cheapest entertainments you can have. You go to a movie nowadays and get a movie ticket, a popcorn, and a drink, you've paid $10. I can play for a month online for $10. But so you would say that my outlay altogether, I have paid out, say, $50 for the game, say $250 worth of online time actually playing the game, so I've put out $300. Well, my account, though, is to the point now where my characters are so high in the game that I could place my actual account on the... If I got tired of the game tomorrow, I could go on eBay, put my entire account up for sale, and sell it off for $500. So my actual account itself is a tangible asset to me. It's property that I can sell. Anybody want to pick up from here and go somewhere?
Well, they also sell gold in the games. I know that when I was looking at setting up a guild at one point, someone suggested that I just go ahead and buy the gold. And it wound up being more than I was willing to pay because they won $75 for like 100 gold on the Great Lakes Shard. And I know that I think you can get like 150 plat in EverQuest, so you can buy the plat for certain amounts of money. So it's, I mean, y'all don't seem too interested in the virtual property thing. I was told when I asked what to do the panel about, and they said, well, kind of hold the idea of the virtual property and just kind of go over it in case anybody wanted to, which I guess we did. Mainly they wanted us to do like we did last year, which last year it got off and people just started asking questions about the games and playing the games. I know that last night they held a very serious online property and the virtual property and everything panel. And so he said that, you know, most of the technical stuff would be covered in that. So,
How many people were at that session last night where we talked about multiplayer online games? For those of you that weren't here, we talked about a lot of things. I'll bring you up to speed on what we spoke about in terms of virtual property. It is a very hot issue, so there was a little bit of debate on whether or not it is right or wrong to buy or sell items online. In terms of an in-game item, can you get an in-game item for real-world cash? We discussed how one way to check if your multiplayer game's economy is balanced or not is to go onto eBay and check the exchange rate. As she was saying, there's usually a very, very specific exchange rate that people know about. How many plats can you get for a dollar? Like in Dragon Realms, our game, you can get it's 2 plat for $1. In Gemstone, which is the game that's been open for much longer, so there has been inflation that has crept in over the years, you can get 35 million, or it's a million silvers for $35 is what the current rate is. So we can go on eBay and we can say, as long as that exchange rate is pretty much stable, then we know that we've probably got a pretty balanced economy. If the exchange rate starts changing very rapidly, then we'll know that there's a problem somewhere. Maybe a hacker has figured out a way of manufacturing silvers, or some items are getting out there that are changing the balance of things. So it gives us a clue that we need to go out and take a look at things. But one thing we found is that no matter which game we do, it seems to be human nature that one of the first things that people will do when they go into the game is figure out what the resources are and which resources are scarce, be it money, be it items, be it potions, be it houses or real estate in Ultima Online. And whatever resources are most scarce, are most desired, a black market economy arises very, very rapidly. There's very little that you can do to stamp out that black market. It's been suggested that we stop the transfer of things. Don't let people give swords from one to another. Don't let people switch ownership of an account from one person to another. But that's also a very, very difficult thing to change. For example, in our games, we have hundreds of character transfers from one account to another that occur on a monthly basis. Most of them are not any kind of cash transaction. It's just roommates who've split up, and so they want to get separate accounts for their different characters. A husband and wife that got a divorce, so they had two characters on their account. Now they need to have two different accounts. And some people trade characters. They'll say, I'll give you my level 17 cleric and my level 5 rogue, and you give me your level 30 wizard. They trade characters the way that they trade magic cards. The majority of those trades cause no problem whatsoever. They're not disruptive to the game environment. Nobody complains. But every so often a character is transferred that had friends, had a social structure around them, that does raise enormous complaints. Everybody gets very upset that this person's personality in the game has suddenly changed. And that is a problem, and that's something that I have yet to figure out a good way to address. So if anybody has suggestions on that, I'm open to hearing it.
Starts being given a legal denomination. How much interest has been arisen within the financial community as to taxing? Are we worried about that yet? Because all of a sudden, like you said, someone sells a castle for $700, whether it's in a game or not in a game, as far as the government's concerned, that's income. And how has there been interest in that, and are we prepared to deal with that?
I don't know that much about the rules on eBay. I mean, if somebody buys a $1,000 chair or something on eBay, is there tax involved? Does anybody know?
Well, if it becomes, well, I don't know. That's a good question.
Well, on eBay, if you sell something, when you build your account initially as a seller, you basically state what state you live in, and then you fall underneath the tax rules of that state. So they are, you know, you are supposed to pay, you know, sales tax.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's also the situation if somebody buys it but doesn't use eBay, there's no record of the transaction. Well, it's like if you sold your car to a friend, the state of Georgia doesn't know that you sold your car, you know,
still,
or what you...
You're still obligated legally. I'm not saying...
Oh, yeah. There's obligation. Oh, yeah.
And I guess the point is should we start concerning ourselves with protecting our transactions online? Let's say it's not $700. Let's say it gets so ridiculous that I sell you my castle for $70,000.
Right.
Let's say there's some whack.
Well, just for the record, the world record sale, to my knowledge, of virtual property was in Gemstone. We had one character that sold all of his inventory to another character in the game. The price was $35,000. I know both of the people involved. It's a verified transaction. I was pretty horrified when I heard about it.
Horrified? You should be nice.
It's a pretty good profit for a game he probably paid $50 for.
And it shows that stuff in our game has value. We have a high-quality game.
This game that you have is very different from the others, because when you sell a character, you have to sell the entire account.
No.
You can't sell a character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one account can have dozens of characters on it, and we have mechanics so someone can transfer one character of that account to another account.
See, the others, the big three, the EverQuest, UO, and Asheron's Call, you can't. I mean, it's the whole account. Everything
right.
goes.
No, you can sell an EverQuest, you can.
Uh-oh. You can sell a character? How?
No. Can you
no,
you
the
not
account
ask,
goes.
Can you not ask a game master to transfer a character from one account to another?
Generally, they won't do it. If you
possible.
Did, you would be very. I've never heard of it.
Account.
If you have,
okay, no,
that's
but I've
different.
Heard it's possible that they can do it, whether they like to or not.
Very,
it's relevant.
Very, very,
but it's
because we had any of you that were here last year, the guy Remy, while he was down visiting, he started an EverQuest character on one of our accounts, and he was never able to get that off of our account. We had to just erase it and let him start a new character. So they would not allow him to do that. Now, they may have changed something since then, but in my personal experience, it was not allowed at all. He had to purchase his own account, which I think is a good thing, because if you're going to get rid of a character, the whole thing should go with it. It forces you to start a new identity, to establish your own self, if you're going to continue to play.
Now that it's been established that this has huge value, do you think that companies are going to try to protect that by offering insurance?
Insurance for what?
From a hack, a glitch, something erasing, getting rid of this investment that you paid so much money for.
I think it's going to have to go a lot higher for that before they're going to do something like that. I mean, $700, this is a game.
Right.
So I don't think they're going to start doing insurance for something like
not,
that.
Not to people who will pay $35,000.
We've had the issue
come
up.
I can
tell you what we do.
You know.
eBay does have insurance. They have a lot of different options for transferring intangible commodities. If you sell something on eBay, you are automatically insured up to $200 with a $25 deductible. That means, of course, if you sell something that's less than $25, it turns out the guy takes your money, never sends you the property, or he never meets you in the game to give you the property inside the game, you're out $25. But anything up to $200, you could get everything back but $25 simply by telling eBay, I never got it. Now, everything over that amount, they do have options, for instance, to use escrow, which is that you can pay approximately about a 1 to 2% fee of the value of what you're getting. Like, for instance, you buy a castle for $700, like we're talking about. They would charge you about 1% of that, which $7. They would hold the entire $700 in their possession until you turn around and notify them that you did actually receive the castle in the game. You know, and then they also add, on top of that, they have arbitration panels where they will try to get, you know, some type of resolution between the buyer and the seller if, you know, somebody feels that they were ripped off or something. Yeah.
I want to apologize for not knowing that she and you that much information and for not talking to him before we came in.
I think he had his hand up. Awkward.
Technically, the character and the items are not owned by the player, so they're owned by the company. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how insurance would be handled then. They'd just be insuring themselves because playing the game is a service. You're not buying a product.
Okay. I think there was a question. There was a question over here. Who had their hand up over here?
Technically, it's supposed to be illegal because it is not supposed to be your property. You are renting the property to play, technically. So, and Asheron's call said that they were not going to have any trading at all. But as you can see, it's going on anyway.
Mm-hmm. When is the game companies going to start taking liability for the consistency of the characters so that, like, if I do spend all this time, if I shut myself up in a room for 2 years to build this character mm-hmm. and this online life, and then they decide, you know, okay, well, we're building this other game that doesn't exist anymore. You know, do you think that the gaming companies will ever take the responsibility to take liability for the things they do wrong?
There's actually many people that take that exact stance among our customers who say, you know, especially before when you played these games and it wasn't a monthly charge, it was an hourly charge, sometimes as high as $35 an hour. And it was very, very normal for regular players to have bills over $1,000 a month. I mean, I was a player back then, and I had bills over $1,000 a month. And it would just rack up on the credit cards. And sometimes you'd be role-playing with someone in the game, and then they would suddenly vanish. And you'd say, what happened? Did they not like the game? And they said, no, it was meltdown. Credit card meltdown is what we called it. And frequently these people would write in and say, I have invested $20,000 into my character, so you have to listen to me when I tell you how to change wizard spells or change the game in some way. And we've just taken the stance that no, we're providing a service, and it's not that you're investing into a real property kind of item, though I can understand where that feeling comes from. I mean, if you put a lot of money into something, you want something back for it. But we see the games as a service rather than as a product that we're selling.
Yeah. This does sound like a good topic for a couple of lawyers to get together in a small room over. I mean, because you're basically talking about something that has a tangible value that you can sell on the internet. Let's say that you make an arrangement to sell that item. Let's say the gaming company finds out about it. You go up to your castle, and there's a big empty field there. You know, they came in and they deleted the castle because you're violating the terms of service. You're selling something from the game. You know, you're merchandising. you know, it's a tangible value. If the game company doesn't insure it, or if it's accidentally deleted, say the server drops and when they reload their tape, it's gone. You know, could you actually take them to court and say, hey, I lost tangible value here of $700 because your server went down last night?
And we've put a great deal of effort into the fine print on our website that says exactly what he was saying, that everything in the game belongs to us, belongs to Simutronics. It does not belong to the people that play the game. We've also had people say, hey, I came into your game and I sang this bard song, therefore it's a copyrighted work, and if anybody repeats that song, you have to pay me royalties on them singing the song in the game. And we say, no, as soon as you sing it in the game, it belongs to us. I mean, we've never gone out and told someone, okay, you sang it in our game, you can't sing it in anybody else's game now. But it's very, very clear in the fine print. Everything in our game belongs to Simutronics.
And that was really my question, is when is that going to change? Because I totally disagree with that stand. And a lot of the players, people, give it exactly the same way. Mm-hmm. It is my property.
When
I find it in your game, it is my property.
Well,
your fine print's not going to protect you either. Mm-hmm.
In the short term, it will, but when you start allowing transactions of legal tender to occur, and when I say allow, yeah, you have nothing to do with it, and you're not doing anything to stop it, when that starts occurring, your fine print means nothing.
And that's a good point. One of the things that we're in discussion with eBay right now is that they're putting some new policies in place to prevent the transfers of copyrighted works. And so we're corresponding with them. Do we want to have a policy where nothing that's related to Gemstone or Dragon Realms or any of our games can be sold on eBay? Because you're right. If you do not take efforts to protect your copyright or trademark, you have no right to say that such things are, you know, to enforce the fine print in the future. You're absolutely right. I think there was a question way in the back.
Basically what I was going to ask, why aren't the publishers doing exactly what you're doing and just deleting all the accounts of people who are clearly violating TOS?
Well, the clearly violating is the issue. And I realize I'm monopolizing a little bit, so feel free to jump in. For example, you know, we may see something on eBay that says wizard character Merlin on sale for $25,000 or whatever, and we could say, aha, you know, that's a violation. Let's lock Merlin out. Merlin and all his brother and sister characters on the account are gone. Well, how do we know, though, that he was really transferring the character? Maybe somebody who didn't like Merlin went in and created that page on eBay just to try and get Merlin locked out. We have that happen on a regular basis. Someone will say, well, that's my account, and so-and-so is using it without my permission, get rid of them. But we have no way of verifying who that is.
Yeah. Well, since we're talking about something that does have tangible value, of course, what we're taught also brings up the possibility of fraud with this. Somebody places something up there on eBay. They say that they have a tower for sale. You turn around and send them a check. You never hear from them. Maybe they don't even play the game. I mean, anytime you have something that has tangible value, there's going to be people out there that are, you know, scamming on it, you know, or doing fraud.
Yeah, we've had exactly that happen.
Right.
Someone will write into our feedback department and say, so-and-so is going to sell me a sword for $100. I sent him a check for $100, and he didn't give me the sword. Take action. They'll even send us the canceled check of the $100, and we'll say, caveat emptor, this is not a sale we're involved with. We're not endorsing it. We're not approving of it. If one character wants to give a sword to another character, that's up to them. They can do it. Maybe there's real world money changing hands, and maybe it's, you know, somebody rolled up a new female character who gets all sorts of stuff just given to her for logging into the game. We have no way of seeing, was there money or did he just like the color of her eyes and he gave her all his stuff?
We won't mention that there's a Chia Puff out there just to prove that point.
Yeah. How many people here actually play any online games right now that... Well, okay. Almost everybody here knows what we're talking about then. Okay. So you have tangible value inside the game. Most of the people who play the games, have you ever, like, in the game had somebody come up and say that they're going to sell you something, and when you looked at the item, it wasn't what they said it was? You know, a lot of times like that. Sometimes I just hang around. This is part of the community thing, which a lot of the players think this is a bad thing. But the problem is, you know, if you're going to have a full world experience, you've got to have the good and the bad. You've got to have the people out there who are the people out there who are ripping you off, just as much as you've got to have the people out there who are the white knights that come charging in to save you. I have a lot of fun just standing around watching people in the game, just the interaction between the people saying, you know, One of the cutest things I see are there's in Ultima Online, you can strip down almost naked. You're down to the point where you're wearing this little bitty thong, bikini and everything. And people will create female characters, strip them naked, and walk around by the banks in the game saying, please give me money, please give me money. Right?
Yep. We had a guy in our game that was advertising as a pimp. He had a website up and said, come into the game and pay me money and I'll set you up. And he had text scripts set up to be a prostitute in the game as one of the alien characters. There was some real creative stuff in there. And then we said, no, I mean, that was over the line, that we weren't going to allow that. And we told him, this is disruptive. It's generating too many complaints. It's got to stop.
Right. Will you be having copies of Ultima Online sold after this?
No. No. All right. No. You know, and the funny thing was, this girl was making more money than I was, you know, in the game. I could be going out there killing liches, you know, just about, you know, on death's door, going up against dragons, come back, and this girl probably made three times as much money as I did while I was gone. You know, people were handing her thousands of gold and everything. It also helps if she went like tee-hee now and then, you know, or giggled.
Stamped her foot.
Yeah, or stumped her foot. And then there's also people around the banks that are selling swords saying they're silver when they're not and things like that. I had a guy try to sell me a boat, and I said, okay, shrink the little boat down. He said, I can't do that. And I said, well, it's not your boat, you know. But he was going to try to get 5,000 gold out of me for a boat he didn't own, you know. So,
Ultima Online 2, which is also being done by OSI. They announced that they're going to have, as a feature of the game itself, the ability to sell items in the game for real gold, or for real money outside the game.
Really?
Yes, it's on their FAQ.
Well, this is an interesting idea, too, which would be sort of the add-on method, which would be you buy the game, and then the game company themselves would actually sell you things within the game. Like, you want a house? Okay. You can go earn it in there, or the game company will sell it to you. That's a nice idea.
It's something that's been discussed, and
huh?
Is the company going to take a percentage?
So this sounds like the... It sounds like the...
I mean, on the business side, I can understand that. On the emotional gamer side of me, I'm kind of horrified at the idea. But it really comes down to what the customers are going to want and what type of product that a company is going to offer. If you want to offer a quality product, how do you define quality? Well, quality is not defined by what the company thinks. Quality is defined by what the customers think. The customers have expectations, and you are exceeding those expectations, you have a high-quality product. Now, if customers think that service about being able to sell things for real-world dollars is a cool thing, it's what they want in a product, I say more power to you. But if people are going to be getting fed up and leave, then it's something that's going to need to be thought about.
It's going to have to be a balance there, because if enough people feel that things are just getting to the point where if you don't have enough money, you can't do good in the game, you know, they're going to lose a lot of customers. Or Origin right now, with the fact of tangible, you know, value and everything in the game, Origin is going through a bit of a turmoil right now with Ultima Online, because of the fact that they kept promising and promising that they were going to open up more land so that people could place houses, so they could have these tangible, you know, houses. And when it came down to the actual doing this last Friday, most of the servers... Yeah, I see a lot of thumbs going down. I bet you were stuck on ice.
4 hours.
4 hours. Oh, yeah.
Stupid.
Oh, yeah. I've got a horror story that night. Oh, Lord. Yeah. What happened, of course, was that they've been promising and promising and promising this, and there were all these people that were just waiting for months and months and months to go with these deeds to go place these houses that they had. And so when they brought the servers up Friday and they said, okay, the servers got slammed. All of a sudden, these servers that were supposed to handle maybe 5,000 people online were getting hit by 10,000 people, and they were sitting at these screens that said, entering Britannia, and just sitting there waiting and waiting and waiting to get in. Well, of course, the lucky people, the few who were in there, got to place their houses. I haven't got any figures on how many people did not. I see some heads saying no.
Several of the servers didn't get
right.
Right. It just depended on whether you went poop or not.
Right.
On Chesapeake,
and
they literally, you couldn't move
all
over the server boundaries anymore.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had that problem, too. It was like I could not recall across server boundaries and things like that. I had to ride a boat from Serpent's Isle to Scarab Break. I'm not going to get into my own experiences on there and everything, but this is actually going
to
wind up in a
lot
of ways.
That's what we're supposed to be doing, Alan.
This is going to become this is going to become sort of a negative impact on the industry too. Is the fact that these things have developed such a tangible and emotional value to the players as status symbols and as possibly even selling on eBay, that now because of the fact that they haven't been able to do this, there are a lot of people that are probably going to wind up quitting Ultima Online because of this. Ultima Online is trying to take a step back. They're trying to, you know, suddenly freeze the whole thing. Their game is broken up into a shard system, which means that they have a set of servers in different cities spread all across the world. So the first thing you have to do is pick out which shard you want to play on because you can't go back and forth between these shards. Now, so what they did is they had three shards where they did go ahead and place houses, but the rest of the shards, they either froze them or rolled them back until they can try to figure out how to meet these emotional needs that the players have to place these houses. Because in my own personal opinion, I think they're running scared that they're going to lose half their people here for this game.
Best estimate is there's at least 20 deeds for every castle site in the world, period.
Mm-hmm.
Smaller houses, who knows?
Yeah, well, there's only 20 sites in each shard that you can place a castle. Anyway, I think there's 22 sites. But the last time I checked, that you can place a castle.
I've heard more, but maybe
off. Yeah. Okay.
I've got a quick question. We talked about it a little bit earlier. What do you think about pretty much the next step of virtual online property, of being able to have, for example, a user-created painting, which is then commissioned to that person? For example, I make a painting that I want to sell people to put in their virtual homes,
mm-hmm.
on Ultima Online or,
yeah.
or another product. And then when the people buy that product, they buy it with actual cash.
That's happening.
And then submit that. I heard that Richard Garriott, before he left Origin, was working on a new project that used that as one of its center points.
I can't speak for Ultima. In our games, we do have a character portrait system where a portrait of a character can be commissioned by an artist. I think the cost is, about $150 or $200 per portrait. And then we will take a version of that portrait and put it in the game so that anybody else that looks at that character will see a picture of the character done by this artist.
Hmm. Okay, yeah, that's the type of thing I was talking about.
Are we talking specifically a specific game here, Ultima Online, Asher's
No,
Ball,
I just,
or?
As in the next step.
Yeah.
Really towards actually being able to make a living by creating items for the games.
Well, part of the problem is if you're creating custom items in the game, this means that the gaming company is going to have to turn around and send a patch out to every single person out there who's playing the game so that they can now see this. Unless they develop some type of system where you clicked on that item, it would then go to a special address on the internet.
Was actually part of the project that they were doing with that game that they up until recently were developing.
Right.
But I thought that was kind of an interesting idea.
It's an interesting idea. I didn't hear about it, though. Yeah. I hadn't heard of it.
Yeah, and in our games, because most of our games are text games, we can make personalized items very, very easily. It's not uncommon for every single character that's online at a particular time to have from one to all of the items in their inventory personalized just for that character.
I just want to add that you don't need a patch always, because in Asheron's Call, it automatically loads up objects, textures, and images as you're approaching something, like you're approaching town.
Okay.
You would be loading up all the images you need.
Is this pulling it off your hard drive or pulling it through the internet?
I think it's through the internet, but it's called dynamic load balancing. It's the next generation.
Okay. So they would also have the ability to customize an Asheron's Call that they wouldn't have in Ultima. Ultima is very much, it pulls everything from the drive. So anytime they make any change in the game, they have to send a patch out to everybody. If they put an extra tree in, everybody has to get that patch. Now, if anybody's loaded Ultima, you know that when you first initially load Ultima, you have to then sit and wait for about 2 hours for all the patches, because they come out with a patch every single day, it seems like. Yeah.
So when they added new land, you had to download a patch?
Yeah. What this originally, when Ultima Online came out with the original version, they started doing patches more and more and more and more, and then they came out with the second age version, which was basically all the patches up to that point, so you didn't have to wait for that. Which then they stopped selling the first version. You can't find the first version in the stores anymore. if you somehow got one from a friend and you loaded that, then you would have to load all of those patches up to the second edition, and now you would have to load all the patches all the way up to what's called the Renaissance Edition, which is the current one right now.
Okay. Talking about custom items in the game, the problem you get into with that is when they design the game, they have to design it to work over a network, and they can only have so much traffic on that network. They have to, currently they've designed most games to work on a minimum of a 28 modem, is that correct?
Yeah, 2856K is what we pretty much work with,
yeah.
And so, 800 by 600 resolution.
And you all know how long it takes to load a simple image over the net. You know, just imagine walking into a town that 100 people have custom images that you're going to be seeing. Just imagine how long it's going to take to load that onto your computer over the net. And that's what's stopping the game developers from doing wonderful things like that that they've wanted to do.
Well, there's also an inherent limit in the internet itself. Has anybody here actually upgraded to an ADSL line just to play an online game?
There's
or cable modem? Yeah, okay. Was there that much of a difference?
Yes.
There was? Okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm. This is
not addicted.
there's an era of the internet out there. There's a lot of these internet providers are using older Cisco units right now, which means that if you're using an ADSL, you actually get more errors than you would of a modem, which means, okay, you're going to run faster, but it's going to be more prevalent. You're going to lose connection, possibly when you're standing right in front of that dragon that's coming after you.
What is the, this is kind of a follow-up to his question, when do you guys see, or anyone sees, these persistent online games being geared primarily towards broadband connections? When are we basically going to look at those people out there, and no offense to anyone in the room, that are on 28.8 and go, well, too bad for you, welcome to the 21st century?
It's already there.
According to what he just said, no, it's not. That's what I'm kind of curious about.
If you're playing, I do a lot more games than just RPGs. I know that most of you are talking about RPGs only. But if you're trying to play StarCraft, somebody on a 28.8, they can forget it if you've got a DSL. Pardon?
That's what we're trying to play.
Exactly. And if you're silly enough to go through AOL or one of those other things, don't even bother coming into my game. Because you can just forget it. We're out of there.
But that's my point. As far as the game manufacturers, when are the Barrett and Ultima Online and Ashton's Call, when are they going to basically, what are the manual guys if you're running out there, guys?
Their marketing department says they can't.
Their marketing department's not going to let it
happen. We look at what the public owns. We look at what the public has. I mean, we check out the percentages. What percentage of the users out there on the internet, screen resolution? What percentage are using 640 by 480 versus 800 by 600? Right now, the majority are using 800 by 600. The hardcore gamers have probably got big screens or even multiple monitors set up. But the majority of people are going with 800 by 600. So that's what we have to design for. In terms of modem speeds and broadband and all that, again, we mirror what's going on out there, or we mirror what we think it's going to be like 2 years from now, because when we're developing a new game, what is going to be the common hardware platform 2 years from now?
If anybody here is a first-person shooter, how many of you wouldn't love to go in and play against 28.8ers? I'll take my DSL against your 28.8.
Anybody heard the term LPB?
No.
Okay. It's a low-ping bass. I'm not going to say the word anyway. Right. Which just means that you go up against a guy from an ADSL or a cable modem, and he's running circles around you while you're jittering.
We'll go back to that, too, because they're not able to get their packets back to the server. So they also disappear, and you'll and it looks like you're hitting them, but then they pop up later.
You warp over.
And they're back to move. So it's a double-edged sword in that one.
There's also a problem with having DSL. I was out chopping wood for arrows yesterday, and I could click faster than Ultima could send it back, and I found that if I just started click, 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 click on the tree to cut, I didn't get any wood. I had to stop and let Ultima catch me.
The bottom line of the question is going to be, when are they going to limit, or when are they going to put a cutoff and say, hey, you're on a such and such, you're on a 28K baud modem, you're not going to play anymore. And the problem is going to be profitability. You know, you're going to have to, they're going to do a survey of their audience. They're going to see how many people are on this speed, how much are on this speed. And if very few people are on 28, they may make a decision. Okay, we can upgrade our graphics now. We can get a bigger audience by selling the fact that we are running top of the line, cutting edge here. And the loss of the 28K, you know, customer, you know, in the long run, is going to make money. So the bottom thing is, what makes money?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, for our game, CyberStrike, right, we had CyberStrike Classic, which in 93 was the online game of the year. It was the first ever game to win online game of the year. And it uses state-of-the-art graphics. These days, it's nothing. But we have CyberStrike 2, and we made an assumption with CyberStrike 2 that people would have 3D accelerator cards in their computer. Those who wanted to play the game would have 3D accelerator cards in their computer. But we kept the old CyberStrike Classic open, and there are still people who play it. I mean, it might not be more than, you know, 5 to 10 people on a night, but those are the people who haven't upgraded their computers yet. We still have the old game available for them.
Well, part of the responsibility, too, is the phone companies and the cable companies, because where I live, we don't have ADSL or cable or anything else. I mean, I live in the Florida Keys, and that's like 40 miles from Miami, and we can't get anything. And
but you're compensated by a beautiful area. I'm not giving you sympathy for that one. I will come down and let you go play on my DSL just so I can suck up the sound.
Well, I go over to my friend's house. Where he works, he has a T1 over there, and when I go over there to play Quake and EQ and stuff, and it just makes it so much better that when I get back home, it's like, boy, this sucks.
So you can verify that it flies.
Yeah, I mean, when I go over there, it's just like...
Just asking the people in this room, how many of the fastest speed available to you is it under 56K? Or do you have 56K or higher available to you?
Who's on a 28.8? One. Okay.
56K is the fastest you can go? And how many have...
ADSL or cable? Okay. And who are the few that got the, you know, T1s?
T1s?
Okay, the T1ers were going to smack.
I got a T3.
Anybody got an E1? No?
Yes,
that's
exactly.
That's what I did when I
won. Keeps them. Yeah. Well, also, on operating system, how many people are routinely using Windows 2000? Anybody?
Routinely.
Yeah. And Windows 98? Okay, Windows 95? Windows 3.1? Macintosh? Okay. We've actually found, but I mean, you got to play Windows for a lot of the high-end games, but we actually support Macintosh, and we found that 8% of our users are using Macs. It's a high enough percentage that we're going to keep supporting Mac.
Just how about Linux?
Linux?
Yeah. People here use Linux? Wow. Okay, that's more than I was expecting.
How many people here are on Linux for Ultima Online? No?
Can you use Linux for Ultima Online?
Yes, you can. There is a Linux client out there for Ultima Online.
Just do a web search for UO Linux, and it'll take you to the page. All you have to do is you don't install it from the CD. You have to install it on your Windows machine, and then just copy your directory. Like, just copy that directory to your Linux machine, and then change just like one or two files to not look for Windows things.
There are instructions.
Then you can just run it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just a simple editing of a file, and then you run it.
But the big question is, do they have your assist? Because without your assist, who wants to play you up?
It's going to be a lie.
I won't rant about it. That's wrong.
Thank you.
Was
this also supposed to be about online communities?
Last night. This was supposed to be for fun.
This is about virtual property. And
everybody's going to sleep.
I mean, wherever we go from there.
Yeah, we're kind of sidetracking. So if you have a specific question, go
online
ahead.
Online communities was 1 o'clock.
Yeah, it was earlier.
Yes.
How are digital signatures and digital thumbprints affecting digital or virtual ownership? I mean, you were saying it was impossible to know which character was performing which transaction in the real world.
Well,
but if those characters were linked to a person through a thumbprint, which is available now, or digital signature, which is available as of Wednesday last week, you can 100% of the time always know what guy sold what character by watching the logons the next day.
my philosophy is when you're running a client-server game, you know, the server's in my office, the client is in somebody's home, never, ever trust the client. It's always hackable. If there's a way to mm-hmm. send a thumbprint, someone's going to figure out a way to get a copy and send a false thumbprint. Personally, I would never trust those.
Mm-hmm. But, I was just going to, not to go further in it, but the federal government's going to start trusting them, or they did as of last Wednesday.
I saw that on the news.
There will be an expectation.
In
certain matters, yeah, they do pretty good on things like defense. But I'm just saying, it's going to be something the public will expect and something the public will accept. And whether it's a good thing or not, it may make game companies seem backwards not to bring that into the functionality of the game.
That's a really good point. And if it's something that our customers have an expectation that they can ask for that form of security, even though it's not perfect, it's. If someone really wants to get into your house, they're going to get into your house. It doesn't matter how many locks you have on the door. But if that's a lock on the door that our customers want, you're absolutely right. It is probably something we would provide.
But it could be enough to be actionable. Even if there is a way to crack it could be tight enough to still be actionable as proof that somebody used real world money to make exchange outside the game.
It wouldn't be possible. That's what it all boils down to, exactly what you described.
Yeah.
Maybe what would be more useful in a virtual community would be something like a virtual escrow service, where the owners of the server or the manufacturers offer for a small fee of real dollars or not to validate and hold property in escrow for the transaction.
It's something that we've discussed, but as was also discussed earlier in the session, it would also give a formal stamp of approval to these transactions, and we're not sure that we want to take that step because there's a lot of other issues involved with that. But we may do it. It is something we may do.
Scroll down. You want to buy that one? You want that character, huh? It's only $600.
You really here. Put a bid in real quick for us. Thanks.
Of course, you realize you're buying this from a 14-year-old kid.
Yeah. Better that than his virginity.
All the best players are 14-year-old kids.
And that's a real story, by the way. This is kind of like it's connected in an abstract sort of way. How are the online gaming communities not only dealing with protecting themselves and dealing with the issue of property, but dealing with the psychological effects of a persistent online world environment on individuals? And to bring this around, where I live, we just had a recent newspaper article that delved into the effects on certain individuals. Basically, let's wrap it all up and say they lose their lives. They disappear into a virtual online world, and the negative effects in the real world that has, how, and I'm addressing this to you specifically simply because you work for one of these types of companies, mm-hmm. how are online persistent world companies protecting themselves or working to prevent people, human beings, from losing their lives in the land of make-believe where the magic trolley takes us?
The magic trolley, I like that. Basically, online addiction is what we're talking about. And there's a lot of press that's being given to this issue right now. Any hobby, really, and it can be online games, it can be anything, can be something that is a healthy part of someone's life or a destructive part of someone's life. The way to tell the difference, when is it destructive, when is it bad? It's not so much an issue of time, but does it mean that someone's real-world relationships are suffering? Is someone's marriage coming apart because someone's playing a game too much? Is someone going broke and being unable to pay their rent because they're playing a game too much? And I have seen people do that. The majority of people, I think, are able to incorporate as a healthy part of their lifestyle. They get some sort of emotional need met by playing these online games, which I think is a cool thing. Any hobby can be destructive. I mean, you've heard the term golf widow, you know, a woman whose husband plays golf so much that she never sees him. Or sailing. I don't know if any of you have ever owned a sailboat or known someone who owns a sailboat, but that is one expensive hobby. You just pour money into that boat. As far as what we do, we're aware of it. My game design philosophy is that someone who's playing our games should gain something from the experience of playing the game. And that is the very specific line that I have in my mind on a game design element. For example, could we put something into the games that would give subliminal messages and make people want to play more? I wouldn't do that because that would be destructive to someone. That would not be building them up, making them a better person. That would be making them more of an addict. So I wouldn't do something like that. In terms of how can we help someone, I've actually gone to the point of calling. One woman called, and she was just petrified because her husband was playing so much, and he was beating up on her. And she was calling me and saying, can you do something like when he tries to log in the game, you know, give him that message like the server's down so everyone else will be able to get in. Right?
I don't know. I'm thinking that if he's beating his wife, she should be glad for him to get in the game.
Yeah, and I mean, what can I do? She's in Texas. I tried, you know, calling some helplines in Texas and then getting her in touch and saying, you know, call this, talk to your pastor, you know, call an abuse hotline. I'm not trained on how to deal with something like, I'm not a psychological professional. All I can do is really advise someone to get help. And sometimes we've had people call in and say, lock me out of the game. You know, close my account. I cannot keep myself from playing. Close my account and don't let me reopen it. And we'll say, okay. It's also a routine for parents to call in and say, you know, little Joey's grades are slipping, shut the account down. And we'll say, okay. And we'll shut the account down. We'll put a note on it saying, even if Joey calls in to try and reactivate the account, do not do it unless we call his mother first and make sure that his grades are better. So we'll definitely work with folks on that.
Have you ever thought of monitoring how much time a player spends?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've had people that...
And flag it.
And putting a limit on it?
I mean... Just flag it and, you know, give them, you know, notify them that they are spending an outrageously amount of time.
I don't know. I mean, there's been times I could have been given that message saying you have been playing Windows Solitaire too much this month. Get away from the computer. I'll go through phases.
Ultima Online currently has a rewards program running. I don't know if anybody's heard of that yet, where it's not based on the number of hours you run, but how long you have been playing. If you've been playing for a year, you're going to get a prize. If you've been playing for 2 years, you're going to get a prize. You know, so something similar.
Yep. Yeah. Say if someone's been a premium customer for a year, we'll alter one of their items. We'll personalize one of the items in their inventory. You know, we'll make a special session for them just as a thank you. But in terms of hours per month, also just as a note of trivia, a heavy player is generally going to play over 100 hours a month. A super heavy player is, we've seen people over 300 hours a month.
On the one hand, I feel you know, sympathy for people who lose their lives in this. However, if we transfer the responsibility to that on the game company, basically, you're telling people that they're not responsible for their own actions. Okay? You chose to play this game. If you get addicted, I'm sorry, but that was your choice.
Mm-hmm. That's
a result of that to help people. A lot, if I'm allowed to talk at all, a lot of people actually go into the game and they learn about their own personalities. And they develop and they change. And you seem to go through... I've been with UO for a long time. I've done EQ in the other games. People do tend to go in, and they all are addicts if they actually play. If you really go in and you get into the game, at first you become an addict, and you go in and you're obsessed with it. I mean, how many of you play EQ or any of them, and the minute the whistle blows at work, you are booming home as fast as you can to get online? You don't stop at McDonald's, do you? You come home and you get on the computer. Well, you're a different breed.
TMI.
Seriously.
Yes, priorities.
Well, some people think ahead. I've been known to go without eating for weeks at a time. But the point is to get home and get on that. And when you find that you're constantly thinking about the game, you're sitting there, you're talking to your boss, and you're like, well, I need to go home, blah, blah, blah. And there is about a year with most UO people. The first year they get into it. At first they're kind of, you know, not too good. They don't like it. And then as they start getting better and they finally decide what they want to do, it takes off. And they usually disappear. You won't talk to them. They won't call you if they're friends because they don't have time to get on the phone. And they disappear for that year. But when they come out, do what?
They only have one phone line.
Yeah. But when they come out after that year, they're changed. There's something about them that's different because they got to work something out.
What?
I don't have any power over it. You'll have to grab the guy.
Get some
on
questions
side.
Here. My guy.
I was just admitting that standing on the docks in Vesper, someone asked if I was a real character or not because I always seemed to be there.
Well, that was the thing I'm getting at. You, if you do throw yourself in there, there's a part of you that changes. I know a lot of people who have gone and they've taken over different roles and who after they went into the game, they learned something, they took it and applied it to their lives, and they changed their lives with it. And then after they come out that year, they're usually ready to go on, and then they take it as a game. So it's not this big addiction problem. It's just someone hasn't worked through that. They haven't completely filled it yet. With the role-playing games, that's what it's all about. We get a chance to do something online that we can't do for some reason in our lives. We get to try it. We get to make mistakes. You have days, years, months. You get to fly through things. You get to try things you can't do in real life because of real-life problems that would be associated with it.
The minute you, as game manufacturers and online game runners, and as you just did, and I know you're not an owner or an administrator of an online game, the minute online game administrators begin admitting and accepting that their games are affecting the way their users are leading their lives, you have just opened up yourselves to the legal responsibility for influencing those individuals. Now, I'm not saying it's right or wrong.
Well, yeah,
I'm just saying
if somebody goes and watches Star Wars, it could influence their behavior.
But George Lucas isn't.
Look at the people at this convention.
You're right. Hold on. I'm giving you a caveat because George Lucas isn't up there saying exactly what you just said. And that's the point I'm trying to make is when you say things like that as a representative, and I know you're not. I'm just presenting a hypothesis, the minute the online game representatives begin saying, yes, we understand that our users' lives are being influenced by the effect our game has on them, you have automatically accepted responsibility for what your users begin doing in their real lives. And it's
but
just
one
of those things where you got to be real careful.
Chess affects everybody. It's been used for hundreds and thousands of, well, I don't know about that one, but it's been.
Okay. You're talking about liability.
Still,
right.
If there was one company that made chess and only that one company, they could be sued for somebody because the taxes of chess.
Yeah, but that's
like Jodie Foster in the movie Taxi Driver. I mean, who was the guy that shot a president and he said that he was influenced by Jodie Foster in some movie?
In a nutshell, you as a representative of your company don't ever want to say, no offense, what you just said.
I am trying to control you all.
Well, I think a lot of this also comes back, you know, all the stuff that's been going on with the cigarette companies and everything like that, which is the thing is, okay, do you assume liability because of the fact that there are people out there who become addicted to your product? Well, I think they've pretty well nailed down to there are people who are going to choose to be addicted to things. You can choose to be addicted to cigarettes. You can choose to be addicted to alcohol. You know, okay, it is a negative effect on you. You have chosen to do that to yourself. Now, the thing is, did the cigarette company then go on beyond that and actually trick people into becoming addicted? Do the gaming companies actually try to addict people into the games? I don't think they do.
Try to provide a compelling product.
And right? If you have somebody that's addicted to your game, who's playing 400 hours and everything, they're your best advertising. They're running around there saying, hey, this is cool. They're getting all their friends on there and everything. You're not going to try to stop an addict from playing.
They don't have any friends left at that point. The other trick is by definition, you are influencing my life. Ultima Online influences my life. It's one of the ways I enjoy myself. When I've had a bad day at work, I come home, I go to the lich room, and I start killing liches. And I get up, and I feel better.
It's a great stress relief.
You know, I mean, but you are the game companies are influencing my life. That's pure and simple a given. Otherwise, they wouldn't call it entertainment. They'd call it boredom.
Yeah. The prime thing we have to remember here is that also there is also you have to assume responsibility for yourself. If you choose to addict yourself to an online game, it's your choice.
Yeah, I define addiction not by amount of time spent, but whether or not it is causing some sort of negative effect to the rest of your life.
But
if it's just something you're spending time on that you enjoy doing, I don't see a problem with it.
Yeah.
Not to be argumentative, would you please restate the same sentence instead of saying your online game, say heroin?
If you choose to take heroin, you have to assume the responsibility for doing so.
Yeah.
I think if you go out, if you know heroin's bad for you, and yet you turn around and take it, or your friends are all telling you, hey, this is messing up in your life, and you don't want to, you're in denial. You know, now I can see this. I can see the point also. You could have somebody who's addicted to an online game. Their friends are saying, hey, we haven't gone to the grocery store in 3 weeks here, you know. I see a lot of people here that are, you know, you know. Yeah. Or you're back in your room, you're killing liches and everything, and they're saying, we got to be at the movie theater in 30 minutes. I am not leaving right now. I'm down, almost dead. I have no heal spells on me. I'm waiting for somebody to get me out of this dungeon. I'm not walking away from my character. You've invested time in that. You're addicted to it.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have a period in which you're immersed in it and just gone bananas, but you finally get a little bit of maturity and go, this is great for a break, but you know, some of the people that I meet online, I really don't want to meet ever in person. I would much prefer to call my fiance and talk with her on the phone for a while. You know, Teresa, we're doing this tonight. I'll be calling you about 10 because from 8 to 10 we're going on a treasure hunt and we're literally going to go do a treasure map. And that's the key, is it's maturity and it's balance.
Yes, moderation. I want to put in one, there are a few good news stories about online or addiction or spending a lot of time online. For example, I knew a woman in California who was in a different woman, who was in an abusive relationship, and her husband had completely isolated her, would not let her out of the house, would not let her have any friends. But she did have her computer, and she was able to log on, and she was able to get a social release that way. She was able to meet people, and because of the social connections that she created online, her self-esteem finally rose enough that she was able to get the self-confidence in order to leave him and to find a better life. So there are good stories as well.
Yeah, I'm sure everybody's also had a story about somebody, two people met online, they got to know each other online, then they started talking on the phone, and they got married. You know,
we have a wedding every year at our convention. There's somebody getting married, and we're going to have a baby christened next year.
Mm-hmm. A lot of real people meeting people in real life after they've met him in the game. Okay. What time do we go to on this?
Five. I think we're over time.
We're over.
Okay.
We can go for about 10 more minutes.
About 10 more minutes. Okay. The original subject we started with here was tangible property, and you know.
Next, and
virtual assets or anything. Anybody have any more questions about that? Or
you can write the name.
Okay. We do have two, three.
This is probably more of a technical question, but as far as balancing the equity of non-tangible or tangible assets, how do your game designers deal with time inequities? In other words, how do you make sure the game is just as fun and fulfilling for somebody who cannot commit more than, say, 5 hours a week?
Yeah, the occasional weekend player versus the person who plays every single day, every night.
And I mean the person who's really into it but literally cannot devote more than 5 hours to it because of work, family, yeah. Whatever.
I think that's one of the marks of a good game that has not just one or two activities, but many different activities for many different personality types and many different playing styles. That one person may become level 10 after 6 months of intense effort because they can only play on the weekend. Someone else will become level 10 in a weekend. But as long as there's things for level 10 people to do, you know, they'll have something to do. The hard part is the social circle. They want to hunt with the same group. But if the group is advancing at different rates, the group tends to fall apart pretty rapidly. But there's taverns and areas in town where they can socialize at all levels.
Well, I'll give up the mic on this question. So what is the best way to prevent the longer time playing people from just swamping the lower time people? I mean, if you get my question.
When you say swamping, exactly what are you talking about?
Just in EQ, occupying all like, the activities.
But you're not going to play in the areas. I'm not going to play. If I'm level 30, I'm not going to play in the level where a 10 is at in EQ. Unless I have a 10 level character. It's not suited for you. You sit there, you don't get any experience, you don't make any money. I mean, when you're making 15 plat off of one monster, you're not going to sit there and go for 45, you know, gold. You're just not going to do it.
You could also do it, but two ways. You could do it, one, by rewarding a person who is playing only like an hour a day. Good example, Ultima Online. Your skills go up faster in the first hour. It's called the power hour. Your skill, you know, if you're out there chopping wood, your skills will increase like three times as faster in that first hour, and then they slow down. So if you're a long-term player, you're not going to, you know, get that far ahead of a person who's only playing 1 hour a day. Another one also, of course, you can just put, you know, you can put a cap on things. You can maximize the amount of skills that a people can have. I mean, if they play 10 hours a day, but they're maxed out on their skills, they're not going to go up any higher. You know, ultimately, that person who's playing 1 hour a day will reach that point if he just stays away from the other guy.
Yeah. We've also had a similar... I like the power hour thing, though. If someone wants to log on and just role play and hang out with friends for that first hour, then they may not get that bonus. Mm-hmm. One solution that we've implemented is we have what's called a role-playing bonus. And if we observe that someone is a very, very good role player and is spending time socializing with other people, making a backstory for their character, and really adding something to the game's storyline, we'll slap a modifier on them so that any experience they earn will be like quadrupled just because they're a really good role player. So there's different multipliers that you can get up to like 6 or 7 or something. And so that encourages people not to power hunt, to actually do something and form relationships with other people in the game.
It's like like your power hour. It makes sense in real life is where, you know, when you're first starting the day, you're all fresh and all powerful. But as the day progresses and you're tired.
Yeah, you're not as productive anymore. So you're not learning anymore.
Take a break.
Mm-hmm. Especially right after lunch.
But my big thing on this restrictions and the game writers interfering is I remember when there weren't any of this stuff in UO where they were trying to save you against PKs and all these little things they put in to change it. It was a lot more fun. You could respect the people. You got to see what they were. You knew if a blue bard or not a blue thief came up to you that he was going to, you know, you could tell. But now they've changed everything.
Which comes to a good point, which is that ultimately the bottom line is going to be how many players express a desire for a change. I mean, Ultima Online finally reached the point where so many people expressed a desire to be safe from other players killing them that they split the world in two, doubled the size of it, and they set up an entire side where you cannot be killed by another player. They can't steal things off you. They cannot kill you. And so the desire was met. Then there was the desire also for more housing, which they did by doubling the size of the world. Now, of course, some people who do want to attack other people, they're coming out with a faction system to where they're going to have basically four different factions, and it's going to be sort of a giant city wars where all the factions are taking over different cities in Ultima Online. But the bottom line is it's going to be if enough people express a desire for a change in the game, the gaming company is going to be pretty dumb if they don't make that change, you know.
One thing I wanted to mention about the Ultima Online housing, for the people who could get in even, at least on Atlantic, when I tried to find a place to put a house, there was nowhere left. People were camped out everywhere in the world trying to put a house.
Did you mark runes beforehand?
No, don't mark runes. Well, first thing is, how many people we have here? I don't want to take over this, you know, if there's not enough people to demand here. How many people play Ultima Online in here? A few. Okay. Real quick.
Well, I just wanted to...
Don't try to do runes. Don't go to Ice Island.
No.
Try to go below Trinsic.
I wasn't saying...
Yeah.
What do game designers do to try to control this, to try to control this problem to in general?
Well, with what they did, the first thing they did was they broke it up into... There's a lot of people out there who've been playing for a long time, and they have, like, castle deeds, you know, for to place castles. So what they tried to do first was they tried to allow those people to have a chance to place this giant building by doing it in phases. They broke it up into three phases. The first phase, only people who had castles could put, you know, their castles down. Meanwhile, everybody else was standing around waiting in the game, except for the people who were trying to get in. And then they went to phase two, which was where they could place, you know, towers and two stories and everything like that. And then they went to phase three. They're going to go to phase three. They haven't done it yet, where people will be able to place small houses because now they'll be filling in all the little holes in between all the big buildings and everything. They're also making changes to the game because they know there's going to be an extreme server load happening. They're going to do things like shut down normal game functions. The monsters are all suddenly going to disappear because they know there's going to be such a load of players on the servers that they're just going to do away with the monsters for a while. They're also going to shut down all the vendors for a while and so on like that. So they're trying to meet the demands as far as at least ensuring that everybody can get on and have a chance to place. Now, the actual dynamics is if you count how many people have a deed to place a house versus how many spaces there are, it's going to come out 1 in 5. You know, 4 out of 5 people are not going to be able to place, even if they can get online and be there, you know. All the people who have deeds that they've saved up the money, they bought the deed, they figured they're going to place a house and they weren't able to. Yeah, it's up to the, well, they could go to eBay and buy the house. that's the whole, you know, the idea. I mean, people will, a lot of people are in that game just to put that house down because they know once they put that castle down, they can turn around and sell it on eBay. You know?
$100.
Yeah, for $200. Yeah. I mean, the day after houses went down on the Great Lakes Shard, there were 2 castles for sale the next morning. You know, it was very obvious. The only reason that people put the castle down was so they could try to sell it for $500.
And is that what we want a game to become?
Do we want a game to become a something that builds a commercial
sale? But for the real gamer, the role-playing gamer, it doesn't matter. You're not paying attention to eBay. You're not out there worried about it. All you're interested in is your own stuff and what you're doing. But why does it matter to you? But okay, so what if they're selling it? You still wouldn't have the house. If they weren't selling it, you still would not have the house, right?
If they got on there just to do that, just to get that castle so they can make some hard cash, they don't care. If they don't care about the game, and you're in the game, and you've been playing so that you can have this castle, and that's you've been building up in the story, and you've been making it with your, you know, your group and friends and stuff, and you're gonna place that castle, but no. There's 3 people that have been playing that game to make hard cash that they've power leveled and all that kind of stuff to get up there, to place the castle just so they can sell it. And now you're like, well, you know, I'm out. The point I'm getting at is
you're segregating out this group because they're doing it for profit, okay? You're doing it for pleasure. They're doing it for profit. The fact of the matter is, what makes you think if they weren't doing it, you would have gotten that spot? They were there first. You had the same opportunity to get there they did. Why weren't you there first? See, there's a lot of things that goes. It's not just because they're doing it for resale that they should be isolated. See, the thing about it is that I was trying to come across with anyway is that people should not get so many rules and regulations on anything. Let it go. Let it be free. If somebody wants to buy and sell, good. It doesn't affect you. Go first. Alan said just a minute ago,
well,
don't
the thing
mark
is, if you're,
but
if
the
enough people do start
wounds,
doing
right
it just for that, that it does
to where they
you,
logged on,
then
boom,
it's going to
boom,
have to be
boom,
addressed.
Went to the places, dropped their deeds, they got the spots. If they are more focused on getting the house because they want us to get it for money, and you're more focused on it because you want to play in it, the point is, he who comes first gets it. They're not getting any special privileges for selling it.
Okay, I hate to break in right here, but I just want to use the microphone while I've got it. I do want to make one point about it not affecting you, at least in EverQuest, which is what this is the only game I play, really. There have been times that I've been refused into groups because I didn't have a specific piece of equipment. And I've had people come up to me right after that happened and say, well, I'll sell it to you for, you know, $100. So to make the comment that it doesn't affect how you play the game
is
wrong,
is,
because
I've
sat around trying
to
get a group
to have
for 2 hours.
An item that you obviously aren't qualified to get on your own.
And that's not necessarily true.
But then why don't you have the item?
have you ever sat in a...
The conflict you have is not with the game. It's with other people.
No, no, I agree. And that's what I'm saying. It doesn't... It's not something that I want to experience in the game. That's not what I want the game to be. And therefore, it does affect me in how I play the game. That's all. That's my only point. It does
I'm
affect the way I play the game.
I'm saying if you need a combine weapon, go get one. If you need amino axe, go get one.
Okay.
You train yourself to go get it. Find out where it's at and go get it. Why
I've
would
sat,
you do it?
Because I've sat on a list for 6 hours in Lower Guck looking for a group to get a flowing back
Why do you
flowing
need
black
a
silk sash.
Why do yeah. you need a group? Go alone. I play alone. You wait for a group that's going to restrict your...
She dies a lot.
I die a lot, but I go
okay.
and I have them.
I'm not dumb enough to camp the frenzied ghoul by myself. If
well,
you are,
you need to
great.
Hey, I went to unrest at level 9.
Okay, I'm told we
can
take...
And I stayed there till I was 16.
I'm being told we can take 2 more questions
by myself.
And we need to wrap this up so the next group can move in here. Okay, do we 2 more?
Now, my question is that group that wouldn't allow you in the group because you didn't have that certain weapon, do you really want to play with that group?
Good point.
Personally, I would not. If it's a bunch of power levelers, go ahead. I don't want to be involved.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Any more questions? One more?
I just like to make the point that EverQuest requires you to group. You can't really advance much past, I think, level 20 without a group because...
That is a popular belief. Mm-hmm. But most of us that power level, we don't. We do it alone. We solo. Do what? They always solo. The really high ones solo. I've got a friend, 51. He's going to solo. He's not going to share his points with anybody. You'll level a lot faster. Get your wisdom up really high before you start your character.
Okay. We need to wrap up, so any final comments from the panel?
Right. All right, thank everybody for coming. If anybody does play Ultima Online and they're in the Great Lakes, I'd love to meet you online. My character's name's Chia Pet. We have a tower and a villa at the Scara U Crossroads, if you know where that is on Great Lakes. Come out there. It's the first tower you see. Drop by. Look for somebody in our guild. We're the TLC. Athena and I are both in the TLC Trammel Liberation Corps, and love to see you online.
If anyone else has any questions, you're welcome to come up and say hi. I got a couple of brochures here and stuff. Or if you really hated anything I said, here's my card. You can send me flame letters later.